In a world that often confines women to narrow definitions of femininity, Domini Christina's This Is Woman's Work arrives like a thunderclap, challenging us to embrace the fullness of womanhood in all its complexity. This book has become a quiet revolution among women seeking authentic self-expression, with celebrities like Brené Brown and Glennon Doyle citing it as transformative to their understanding of feminine power. Christina, an award-winning slam poet, educator, and activist, doesn't just theorize about female archetypes. She invites us into a sacred space where we can recognize ourselves in ancient patterns of being. As she writes, "You cannot truly author yourself until you know yourself completely." This exploration isn't merely academic. It's a radical act of reclamation that has sparked women's circles and workshops across the country, inviting readers to discover the Colosseum heart within themselves. The journey toward wholeness begins in darkness, with the shadow woman, she who exists in the space before birth, in deep silence preceding emergence. Unlike Jung's view of shadow as merely repressed parts of ourselves, Christina sees this archetype as the necessary secret self we must reckon with to gain full self-command. She's intentionally hidden, guarded, perhaps unrealized, a woman in waiting whose primary experience is silence. Not all silence equals voicelessness. True silence can be meditation, prayer, or refusing to speak until your language is entirely your own. The shadow represents regenerative darkness, not just something to overcome. Like seeds gathering strength before pushing through soil, darkness has profound purpose. Everything ever born first grew in darkness. This perspective transforms how we understand our hidden aspects. Rather than viewing our shadows as chaotic or repressed, we can recognize them as potentially generative, unmapped, enveloped birthing places where higher consciousness awakens. In the dark, there is only you, the first centering place where your being flowers. Consider Emily Dickinson, who embodied this archetypal energy perfectly, a solitary woman keeping her thoughts private, writing volumes of poetry she never shared. Her posthumous discovery revealed the mighty voice she'd kept entirely to herself. There seems to be power in how she remained hidden, making her eventual emergence all the more fascinating. When we rush to overcome our shadow aspects without understanding their purpose, we miss the nourishment darkness provides. What parts of yourself have you kept hidden? What might be germinating there, awaiting the right moment to emerge? The shadow teaches us that becoming requires patience, a willingness to grow unseen before stepping into light. Unlike the shadow woman who dwells in darkness by choice, the ghost woman exists between worlds, refusing to depart despite circumstances that should have destroyed her. She's portrayed as a locked door that won't stay closed, disconnected from her physical body, but profoundly connected to others. She remains because of obligations, whether from love or resentment, with a resilience that defies logic and death itself. The ghost woman doesn't recognize her body's signals. Pain, disease, and physical needs become secondary to her emotional connections. Think of the woman who stays in harmful relationships because she loves too deeply, or the mother so connected to her children she loses awareness of her own physical needs. Her creation comes from obligation rather than self-expression, making her work potentially borrowed rather than authentic. We see this archetype in literature through characters like Beloved from Toni Morrison's novel, a child whose need for her mother was so great she returned after death. Religious parallels exist in resurrection stories like Jesus and Lazarus. Maya Angelou captured this essence perfectly when she wrote, "Every goodbye ain't gone." Many of us have experienced moments of ghostliness, times when we've ignored our body's warnings to fulfill obligations to others. The danger comes when this becomes our primary way of being, when we consistently prioritize connections over self-care. The ghost woman teaches us that while our connections to others give life meaning, we must remain grounded in our physical reality to truly serve those we love. Have you ever felt disconnected from your body while remaining intensely connected to others? This split awareness, being more attuned to others' needs than your own physical signals, is the hallmark of the ghost woman's energy. Reconnecting requires mindful awareness of the body you inhabit, creating a bridge between spirit and flesh.
Can power include choosing obedience, service, and submission when authentically desired? This question challenges feminist orthodoxy by asking whether denying a woman's choice to obey contradicts women's autonomy. The willing woman archetype explores this tension between willing service and forced submission. When in balance, the willing woman chooses service from a place of power. Her obedience becomes a mighty, powerful gift freely given to those she loves. This differs dramatically from submission born of fear or lack of options. Consider the difference between someone who joyfully prepares elaborate meals for loved ones versus someone who cooks out of obligation while silently resenting the task. The balanced willing woman embodies service, committed listening, sacrifice, and acceptance. She finds fulfillment in supporting others because it aligns with her authentic values. The imbalanced version operates from hopelessness, fear, and self-loathing, submitting because she believes she has no choice or worth beyond her service. We see this archetype brilliantly portrayed in Alice Walker's The Color Purple through Sally, who initially submits to abuse after childhood trauma and an abusive marriage. Her transformation begins when exposed to another woman's freedom, discovering a roar in her bones that eventually leads to liberation. The willing woman invites us to examine our motivations for service. Do we give from abundance or depletion? Do we serve others because it fulfills us or because we fear rejection if we don't? By understanding what drives our willingness to serve, we can distinguish between empowered choice and conditioned response. What if service could be reclaimed as a form of power rather than weakness? What if submission, when freely chosen, could represent strength rather than subjugation? The willing woman challenges us to examine our assumptions about power dynamics and recognize that true agency includes the freedom to choose how we express our energy in relationship to others. A clenched fist, a red thing, who has made no a religion. The rebel woman knows herself by what she stands against. The word rebel comes from Latin, meaning to wage war again, revealing this archetype's perpetual fighting nature. For many women, especially those from marginalized communities, rebellion represents power and bravery in the face of systems designed to demean them. This archetype emerges most strongly in times of social upheaval and personal crisis, when maintaining the status quo becomes more painful than disrupting it. The rebel woman possesses persistence, savvy, quick-wittedness, bravery, and action orientation. When balanced, these qualities fuel necessary resistance against injustice. She has an uncanny ability to spot oppression in its subtlest forms and the courage to name it publicly. Her strategic mind can identify pressure points in systems of power, while her persistence helps her endure the inevitable backlash. When imbalanced, these qualities manifest as reflexive opposition, automatically fighting against whatever position others take without discernment about which battles truly matter. History brims with women who have embodied this energy. Asada Shakur, who fought for Black liberation despite imprisonment and exile. Angela Davis, whose radical intellect challenged the prison industrial complex. Rosa Parks, whose planned act of resistance sparked a movement. Fannie Lou Hamer, who endured brutal beatings while fighting for voting rights. More recent examples include Malala Yousafzai, who survived an assassination attempt to advocate for girls' education, and the countless unnamed women leading movements from Black Lives Matter to hashtag MeToo. These women stood up, spoke out, and sometimes simply refused to move, fighting again and again despite clear dangers and consequences. The challenge for the rebel woman lies in discerning which battles deserve her energy. Constant resistance is exhausting when it becomes an identity rather than a strategic response to specific injustices. The reflexively rebellious woman risks burning out her fighting spirit on unnecessary conflicts, leaving little energy for the truly important struggles. she may find herself trapped in a cycle of opposition that alienates potential allies and obscures opportunities for transformative change. The mature rebel woman learns to choose her battles wisely, channeling her revolutionary spirit into sustainable action. She understands that effective resistance requires not just courage, but strategy, not just passion, but precision. How might your rebellious energy serve you better if directed with intention rather than habit? What causes truly deserve your resistance? The rebel woman teaches us that opposition can be powerful when purposeful, that saying no can create space for a more authentic yes to emerge, and that true revolution begins with conscious choice rather than automatic reaction.
Balm and blessing. The woman with cool hands embodies the caregiver who tends to others in sickness and health. She keeps soup pots full of wonderful, provides comfort, and asks, "Can I get you anything?" Her identity centers on generosity and selflessness, making her presence a healing force in others' lives. This archetype distinguishes between being a caregiver and merely performing caretaking duties. The woman with cool hands doesn't just help others, she finds fulfillment in meeting their needs. Her attention to others isn't a burden, but a calling, a natural expression of her nurturing nature. Mother Teresa exemplifies this archetype, as did Princess Diana, whose work seemed motivated not by politics, but by recognizing and meeting needs. Their caregiving appeared to give them purpose, making them necessary to those they helped, life preservers and shade trees for many. The challenge for this archetype lies in self-care. When constantly focused on others' well-being, the woman with cool hands may neglect her own needs. The balanced caregiver remembers that she cannot pour from an empty cup, that her ability to help others depends on maintaining her own well-being. Consider the flight safety instruction to put on your own oxygen mask before helping others. This wisdom applies to all forms of caregiving. By attending to our own needs first, we become more effective in supporting those around us. The woman with cool hands teaches us that true caregiving includes self-compassion alongside compassion for others. What aspects of caregiving bring you joy rather than depletion? How might you balance giving to others with giving to yourself? These questions help distinguish between sustainable caregiving and self-sacrificing martyrdom. Deep belly of the earth woman, ritual woman connected to magic, spirit, and root working. The conjure woman embodies the sorceress, priestess, and witch. She represents profound spiritual connection, serving as her own temple and divining place, recognizing power in nature and spirits. While Western culture often fears magic, etymologically, magic means to have power or produce marvels using hidden natural forces, making the conjure woman akin to mothers, teachers, and all women who transform nothing into something. In many traditional cultures, her presence is pervasive, yet often regarded as unremarkable, simply part of everyday life. She's the woman who can speak to ancestors, create potions, or fix relationships. The conjure woman exists beyond religious constraints, being her own religion or no religion at all. She embraces possibility rather than impossibility, challenging constructed limitations about what can be done. Her self-reliance and deep connection to natural and spiritual forces make her a powerful change agent. Examples of this archetype appear across cultures. Mami Wada, an African water deity who inhabits women's bodies. Mama Day from Gloria Naylor's novel, who helps a woman conceive through ritual. And even Tituba, the enslaved woman who confessed to witchcraft during the Salem witch trials. The conjure woman teaches us that magic isn't supernatural, it's deeply natural, a recognition of forces that exist beyond rational understanding, but within human experience. Her wisdom reminds us that not everything can be explained or controlled through logic alone. Some knowledge comes through intuition, dreams, and ancestral memory. What magic do you carry? What hidden natural forces flow through your veins? The conjure woman invites us to recognize our own capacity for transformation, to see ourselves as vessels for power that transcends rational explanation. The widest door, the best love, the first nourisher,
The wombed woman represents feminine authority, whose body is forever marked by the otherworldly mathematics of one becoming two. She is the beginning of everything, the maternal archetype who creates life both literally and metaphorically. Motherhood transforms identity and creative life. After childbirth, many women experience heightened awareness of dangers and vulnerability, as the author describes through terrifying nightmares reflecting overwhelming maternal fears. The wombed woman carries tremendous weight as the foundation of human experience. Rather than offering traditional examples like the Virgin Mary or Kali, the author argues that the mother is the alpha, the first in everything, despite this term typically being assigned to masculine principles. She examines the etymology of mother as that which gives birth and womb as end place that holds, envelopes, generates, or grows in secret, noting these definitions focus on origination rather than subsequent nurturing. The wombed woman isn't limited to biological mothers. Her energy manifests in anyone who creates and nurtures life in its many forms, through art, community building, mentorship, or literal childbirth. What matters isn't the specific expression, but the generative impulse behind it. Women who lacked nurturing mothers often carry a hole in their chest that affects their relationships with other women, yet many become exceptional mothers themselves. The author examines how motherhood begins with birth, but is made real in the work that follows, the soul work, and gardens you plant in your belly after delivery. What have you birthed into the world? What are you currently gestating? The wombed woman teaches us that creation requires both bringing forth and tending afterward, that our creative acts, whether children or other forms of expression, need ongoing nurturing to thrive. The Journey Woman boldly challenges deeply ingrained societal expectations for women, who have historically been expected to find their primary fulfillment in domesticity and homemaking. Even when she appears to conform by acquiring the conventional trappings of home, marriage, and family, she feels an undeniable pull to move and be out there, experiencing the world in its fullness. This tension between domestic expectations and the call to adventure creates a unique struggle. While male explorers like Columbus, Livingston, or Marco Polo are celebrated as heroes and visionaries, women with the same inclination are often viewed as selfish, unstable, or neglecting their fundamental duties. This archetype represents the perpetually moving and seeking spirit, restless but purposeful in her exploration. She embodies a sacred restlessness that manifests as an authentic quest for understanding, growth, and experience. The author carefully distinguishes between the purposeful explorer and the directionless wanderer, noting that the journey woman's restlessness springs from genuine seeking rather than fear of commitment or inability to settle. Her wanderlust is a positive force, driving her toward greater understanding and self-actualization. Amelia Earhart stands as a powerful exemplar of this archetype, famously stating her motivation simply as, "I want to do it because I want to do it." Her desire for exploration wasn't justified through service to others or a greater social purpose. It was enough that the journey itself called to her. Other historical examples include Isabella Bird, who explored Asia in the 1800s, and Freya Stark, who mapped uncharted regions of the Middle East. The Journey Woman teaches us that movement itself can be home, that for some souls, the road provides more comfort than any fixed dwelling. Her energy reminds us that the human spirit sometimes needs expansion more than stability, exploration more than security. This understanding challenges our cultural bias toward rootedness and suggests that for some, particularly women, the call to journey is as natural and necessary as breathing. What journeys call to you? What unexplored territories, whether geographical, intellectual, artistic, or spiritual, beckon you to venture beyond familiar boundaries? The Journey Woman invites us to honor our innate restlessness as a form of wisdom rather than a character flaw. She teaches that the desire to explore, to seek, to move beyond known horizons is not just valid, but vital for certain souls. Her presence in our psyche reminds us that sometimes the most authentic path is not the one that leads to a fixed destination, but the one that keeps us in perpetual motion, always seeking, always growing, always moving toward new horizons. The shapeshifter woman is whirling, a master illusionist who can appear to be anyone or anything while concealing her true nature. This archetype connects to survival strategies developed by marginalized groups who learned to present themselves as compliant while secretly gathering information and resisting. This chameleon-like capacity allows navigation of oppressive systems while maintaining internal agency. Unlike the typically male trickster archetype in mythology, the shapeshifter woman represents how oppressive systems underestimate those they oppress, creating opportunities for infiltration and resistance. Her strategic adaptability serves as both a survival mechanism and a form of power. The darker side of shapeshifting emerges in women who have adapted to rape culture through wound-driven shapeshifting, pretending not to be afraid or offended when faced with misogyny. The danger lies in constantly wearing disguises until one loses touch with one's true self, making it difficult to remember who she actually is. The balanced shapeshifter woman is the Jedi with a do-no-harm principle, using her adaptability strategically and ethically. The unbalanced version becomes the manipulator, willing to cause suffering to meet her needs, creating chaos only to position herself as rescuer. This archetype teaches us about the complexity of adaptation, how changing our presentation can represent both empowerment and loss of authenticity. The key lies in maintaining connection to our core self while strategically shifting our external expression to navigate different environments. When do you shapeshift? In which contexts do you present different versions of yourself? The shapeshifter woman invites us to examine our adaptations with compassion, recognizing both their protective function and their potential cost to our authenticity. The journey through archetypes culminates with the everywoman, the complete woman present in every chapter, the sum total of all archetypes. She moves fluidly through all aspects rather than being confined to one, existing as a woman built like an atlas, who lives authentically rather than reactively. The everywoman exists in the present moment, fully conscious and aware, neither trying to be herself nor desiring anything beyond what she is. She challenges Western binary thinking by embodying an intensely human completeness that integrates shadow and light, strength and vulnerability, wildness and discipline. This final archetype reminds us that the purpose of exploring individual facets of feminine energy isn't to categorize ourselves, but to recognize our wholeness. We aren't just shadow women or rebel women or conjure women. We contain all these energies in varying proportions, accessing different aspects as circumstances require. The examples given for this archetype are simply you, me, us, suggesting the everywoman exists within all women. This democratization of feminine wholeness challenges hierarchical notions of womanhood that elevate certain expressions while devaluing others. The everywoman teaches us that integration, not perfection, represents the highest expression of feminine energy. By embracing all aspects of ourselves, the shadow and the light, the wild and the disciplined, the nurturing and the fierce, we become more fully human, more authentically ourselves. What would it feel like to move fluidly between different aspects of yourself without judgment or preference? How might embracing your full range of feminine energies transform your relationship with yourself and others? The everywoman invites us to experience the freedom that comes with wholeness, the peace that emerges when we no longer reject any part of ourselves. Dominique Christina describes writing this book as an experiment in naming her interior life that proved both dizzying and exhilarating. She connects her exploration to self-discovery, ancestral memory, and spiritual awareness, honoring African ancestors whose voices were squelched and stolen, yet continue to sizzle up through her writing. This powerful conclusion reminds us that reclaiming feminine archetypes isn't just personal work, it's collective healing that reaches across generations. When women embrace their full range of expression, they recover not only their individual voices, but ancestral wisdom that has been systematically silenced. The author believes her ancestors chose survival so that someday their descendants could tell their stories and put the flesh on the bones. This perspective transforms personal exploration into sacred responsibility, a way of honoring those who came before by living with the fullness they were denied. What ancestral wisdom flows through your veins? What stories are you meant to tell? What aspects of feminine power are you reclaiming, not just for yourself, but for generations past and future? These questions invite us to see our personal journey as part of a larger tapestry of feminine reclamation. As we explore these archetypes, we discover that women are indeed that large and larger, containing multitudes that defy simple categorization. By embracing our shadows and our light, our wildness and our discipline, our nurturing and our fierceness, we reclaim the fullness of feminine power that has too often been fragmented and diminished. The journey through archetypes ultimately leads us back to ourselves, not a simplified version, but an expanded one that honors all the ways we express our humanity. In this wholeness, we discover not just who we are, but who we might become when we embrace all the facets of our feminine power.